I am who I am today because of what I built. So the pros are the experience that you get with doing. I mean, I have legitimately closed over 1,200 transactions. So the knowledge that comes from that, we need to do what's best for the wholesaler because we believe in that longevity of business. And we know that, you know, over time, we're going to buy flips from them anyway. It just happened yesterday where we went and looked at a house and our buy number is like 90 and they have it for 99. Mm-hmm. We can probably wholesale it for like 110.
Welcome to the Cashflow for Life podcast. We believe there are two types of people in this world. People that have greater cash flow coming in every single month or people who have cash flow going out. We believe you need to be the type of person that has cash flow coming in, and that is what this podcast is all about. Our mantra is simple. If you take care of real estate for the first 5 years, real estate will take care of you for the rest of your life. If you're looking to achieve financial freedom through real estate investing, you're in the right place. Andrew Holmes, a renowned expert in the field, is your guide on this journey. Andrew is the driving force behind National RE Invest, the largest real estate investors association in the United States. Together, we're here to help you build wealth and create more cash flow in your life. Let's get into the show.
Today, I am joined by the dynamic real estate investor, Gonzalo Corso. Together, we dive deep into Gonzalo's journey, exploring the lessons he's learned while scaling his business to handle over 1,200 transactions. Starting out in wholesaling at a young age, Gonzalo swiftly expanded his operations by combining his expertise in wholesaling with strategic partnerships. His story unveils the highs of achieving substantial business growth and a nuanced understanding of the Jacksonville market, where he could predict property values with impressive accuracy. However, Gonzalo opens up about the challenges of scaling too quickly and relying heavily on hedge funds for property sales. The market's volatility and the evolving investment strategies of hedge funds posed significant risks, leading to a substantial pivot in his business model. Our conversation explores the drawbacks of rapid scaling, including high operational costs, managing a large team, and the eventual need for a dramatic downsizing due to market shifts. Gonzalo's experience serves as a cautionary tale, highlighting the importance of adaptability and the risks associated with depending on a single or limited number of revenue streams. As we near the conclusion of our discussion, Gonzalo reflects on his current strategy centered around maximizing profits through a mix of wholesaling, flipping, and holding rentals. Through strategic partnerships and optimized business operations, he has found a sustainable model that balances immediate cash flow with long-term wealth building. So, without further ado, tune in now and enjoy this insightful conversation with Gonzalo Corso.
Hey guys, welcome to Cashflow for Life. Today we have a really, really fun guest. We've been looking forward to having him, and it happens to be Mr. Gonzalo himself, Gonzalo Corso, from Jacksonville. So you're in for a treat because scaling up with wholesales, then doing flips, then building a rental portfolio. So Gonzalo, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, man. Excited.
Definitely, man. I'm super excited to have you because you're the one and only guy whose office I went to go see and I was blown away, right? I mean, the operation that you were running was just amazing. So let's pick up there.
Thank you.
Kind of, what was your start in real estate? And first of all, how old are you?
I turned 28 in December. So okay. I am now 28 years old. I got started because my older brother is a realtor slash investor. And as he got the real estate bug, he took me to an event when I was 18 years old. And he had been trying to preach real estate to me for a little bit. I was like, dude, I'm in high school and going into community college. Like, I don't care about any of that. And he was like, I'm going to take you to an event. That way you don't hear it from me. 2 weeks after that event, I dropped out of college and got an internship at a wholesale company. I did that for about a year and a half, and that's really where I learned pretty much everything I know from that. Then I started my own company called Cash Geeks, and the rest is history.
So I met you when you were running Cash Geeks, right? Which is about a year, year and a half ago, let's say. And so you do an internship. Was this paid? Was this unpaid? Or was this kind of a quasi-commission sort of thing?
So it started out unpaid. Okay. And then because it was more of just, I'm an intern, let me do whatever. Right. And then that turned into a more structured role. And then that became paid.
Okay. Yep. So you kind of scaled up with your partner at the time, a pretty big wholesale operation. Where did you guys, I mean, you guys started with scratch, right? Zero. What did you guys scale it up to?
So we started in July of 2017.
Okay.
And it was me, my business partner, $750 of worth of direct mail. Mm-hmm. And we got started. Luckily, the reason why I partnered up with my business partner at that time was he had a lot of business and scaling knowledge, not much wholesale knowledge, but I had all of the wholesale knowledge, no business experience, right? We partnered up when I was 20, turning 21. It's funny, our beginning meetings, I couldn't order a beer when we were talking shop. So,
right.
But at our prime, we had 27 in-house employees in the office, which is the operation that you saw.
Sure.
And then overseas, we had about 40 VA call at a call center in Egypt. So we had about 40 of them. We closed back to back.
Hold on. Before you move forward, I want you to explain this because this is just an awesome operation that you were running. So explain what the VAs were doing, then explain in the office. You had 27 people and you had people who would basically take the calls. Then you had kind of the appointment setters. You had that whole process. What was that like?
Yeah, absolutely. So our main form of marketing direct to seller was cold calling. Okay. Yep. So because of cold calling, we realized that if we're not doing live transfers, we're not able to get these people back on the phone. And so our model was focused on live transfers. So what that means is a VA, a virtual assistant, would call a homeowner. We were in 11 different states, 14 mm-hmm. different markets. Mm-hmm. And we would call homeowners. The virtual assistant asked three questions. Okay. And that was, they had to confirm that it was the address and they were the owner. They had to confirm that they were looking to hear a cash offer. And they had to confirm that if they got a cash offer that worked out for them, that they would sell.
That was the pre-qual. Okay, correct. Got it.
Yep.
And these guys were where? Were these guys at the time?
Egypt.
Okay, got it. Okay, and how did you happen to pick Egypt?
So I actually, funny enough, I used to mentor these guys in wholesaling. And they saw that there was a need of finding virtual assistants. And so they created a completely different business on finding virtual assistants. And they found good pay with the mixture of good work ethic, with the mixture of culture, right? You have to have those three things if you're going to have a successful virtual cold caller. Because keep in mind, when we're cold calling, these are technically our first impression, right? This is the first impression to the seller of our company. And so they figured that out and we loved them. And we turned off everything else that we had with other virtual assistant companies or direct with us. And we just completely started working with that company. And it was awesome because it helped us scale also working with a third party company. Because it was almost just like taking orders. We could just call and be like, hey, we need two more next week. And then next week we'd have two more, right?
So two more seats basically filled.
Correct. Yes. Got
it. And so before you kind of switched to that, right? Obviously it was an evolution to that.
Yes.
How long did you guys do mailings before you decided this was much more effective for your style of doing business?
Great question. We did mailings, I would say, for the first 2 years. The first 2 years we did mailings. Cold calling for wholesaling was also not that big of a thing when we first got started, right? And then it was, you know, we were a little skeptical because it was already working. Direct mail was already working. And so the beautiful thing that I think that goes hand in hand with cold calling is what I've learned over time is your marketing channel affects your sales process. If you get an internet lead from a seller who is going online, that requires a different sales process than a cold call lead, right? And so we sucked, to be honest, at like internet leads, because we were too scaled of a company to handle it the way that an internet lead needed to be handled. And so we realized that for operating in a virtual fashion, right, our headquarters was in Jacksonville, but we were in 11 different states. If we started everything over the phone, it was easier to close and get everything done over the phone, right? And so we stuck to cold calling because we wanted to scale and grow. We realized with direct mail and internet leads, there was a lot more appointment setting, going to the house, all that. And that made it harder to scale and grow. Not saying it can't be done. We just picked a different way of scaling.
So
we did mailers for about 2 years.
Okay.
And then we did some A/B testing, right? And slowly but surely, the leads and the deals that we were getting from cold calling weren't as sexy, to be honest, but it was a lot easier and the cost was lower.
And so when you optimized it, that optimized and scaled at a higher rate than the mailings. Okay, got it. Okay, perfect. So that leads me to a bunch of questions, because you're doing 11 states, 14 different markets. Number one, how would you pick the state? How would you pick the market? Because at the end of the day, who was your end buyer for all these properties?
That's a good, great question. So what allowed us to scale and crush it for so long also is the reason why we fell. And so to answer your question, the reason why we were able to expand into all these markets is because we were primarily selling to hedge funds. We didn't start out that way, right? But in 2020, when COVID happened, right, all these hedge funds got a ton of free money and wanted to buy single family homes. When inventory dropped, because anybody could go buy a house, these hedge funds could no longer buy because the capital now increased
tremendously,
exponentially, right? But the inventory went down. And so now what happened in 2020, which had never happened before, all these hedge funds now were forced to buy from wholesalers, which we didn't have that before. And so because of that, we picked up on that. And because of the operation that we had and the volume that we were doing, hedge funds loved us. And so over time, we just started in Jacksonville. And then when they would send us their buy box, they would send us everything. And so we were just curious about their Jacksonville buy box. But then there was Atlanta, there was Phoenix, there was all these markets, right? And so we were like, hey, instead of trying to do more in Jacksonville, what if we just try cold calling in Orlando, Florida, right? We first started in the state. And so that kind of allowed us to not have to figure out dispositions, right? True dispositions, right?
Sure, because as long as you fit that kind of box that they were in, they're going to buy because they have money to spend.
Correct.
It's very different. It's very different than a regular client like you or I that are buying, because we're going to be much more specific. But they're saying, hey, we got $30 million to drop in the Florida state market, in the Florida state. These are the things, and buy. And everybody's making money because they're basically, as long as you can put the deal in front of them, they're buying, and then rest is history. Basically.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Got it.
And I mean, so that's
a very different operation. And a lot of people don't see that side of it.
Absolutely. You know,
because they're in the game of basically managing money, right?
Yes.
So the more they handle, because they operate on different margins that a regular local real estate investor can operate. You can never compete with them because they'll just outspend you. I mean, that's just
correct.
It, period, right?
Correct.
So it's a different operation. Okay.
Yes. And so that allowed us to scale, grow very quickly. It was great while it lasted, but when it turned off, my business was dependent on it and it affected us, right? And so I wish it would have turned off quicker. I know that sounds weird, but when interest rates started to go up, because at this point now, we started off with just one hedge fund, right? In like 2019, there was one hedge fund that was buying from wholesalers, but they were buying through a realtor. So it was like, hey, if we go through this realtor, he'll sell it to a hedge fund. There's still a realtor involved, so they feel good about it, right?
Yeah.
But we still had our you know, normal mom and pop wholesaling. Sure. And then we got another fund. And then we got another fund. And then through that, we were like, hey, this is going really well. we're beating our head against these leads. Why don't we just call these really nice houses? All these hedge funds are buying them, paying top dollar. We're not getting as much discounts, but we're able to do more volume. And so we went down that path.
Yeah. And so it's basically for the audience listening, guys, you know, and it, this sounds very sexy. And if you've seen his operation, like, oh my God. But here's the nuance which he's talking about behind it is, imagine this. Imagine you have 100 people you can sell to, or you have two big whales, right? They don't give you any problems. Every time you produce something, boom, they buy, they buy, they buy. But guess what? Interest rate goes up, or something happens on Wall Street, boom, those whales are gone. The problem becomes is you basically are two-trick pony, and as it's great when it lasts, but the day it shuts off, now you don't have a buyer's pool, and suddenly you have a massive payroll, right? Because you were not just doing people, I mean, you were doing 401ks, you were doing, people are making 100 grand, you know, working for you. So this is not, this is a professional job, right?
Oh, absolutely.
This was not like a, you know, a little podunk show. I mean, you go to his thing, it's like a sales floor, TVs, this, that. What kind of numbers did you guys get up to at your peak?
At our peak, so we closed 4.2 million.
In gross revenue.
That was our peak in 2020.
And how many transactions was that?
308 transactions.
308 transactions. Okay, got it.
That was our peak.
So if today somebody looks at it, right? I mean, obviously I met you at Kent's place and I was like, man, I got to come and check out this guy's operation, right? And I literally flew the airplane over from Punta Gorda over to your place, a half an hour ride. And I was like, man, this is just amazing, right? And clearly you guys had built something genuinely, you know, that put a smile on anybody's face that watches that operation at an early age. I mean, you're barely 28 now. So for somebody that is looking from the outside, they're like, man, I want to be Gonzalo, right? Because what you guys accomplished is just awesome. I mean, there's no question about it, because the amount, I can't imagine the amount of hard work. I mean, now you need a HR person, you need this whole operation when you got 40 some people, VAs that are out of the country, and then you got 27, 28 people in-house, right? What were the good parts, pros, and then what were the cons?
Yeah, absolutely. The pros, I would say, was I am who I am today because of what I built. So the pros are the experience that you get with doing. Now, I mean, I have legitimately closed over 1,200 transactions. So the knowledge that comes from that, and the just knowing real estate, right? Knowing a title issue, knowing how to put this fire out, knowing all that, like without seeing those 1,200 transactions, I mean, I have knowledge of real estate that it would take people lifetime to get, right?
No question, no question.
And so that is like, that's what I treasure the most. Secondly, because of that, I know the Jacksonville market like the back of my hand. You give me a street, you give me a zip code, you give me a price point, I can already, I don't need to know anything about the house.
Sure.
Just tell me, like, is it great condition, bad condition, medium condition? Give me bedroom, bath count, and zip code and street, and I can tell you right now if I can sell it for how much, if I'll flip it, you know what I mean? And so that is second. And if you would have told me in the beginning how valuable that would be, I wouldn't have done it. I would have been like, oh, all that work and stress and, and, you know, don't get me wrong, like money was great, but it wasn't like we were grossing 4 million and we were netting 4 million, right? And so if you would tell me all of what I would have gained from it, I probably wouldn't have done it, because my mindset was just money. And the money that I thought that I would have been making doing 4 million a year, 300 transactions, was not what I expected to be making, right? I was expecting to be making a lot more. But there was this always, we need to do more. And this is the con of scaling, is the one day we will make more money. One day it'll pay off. One day it'll pay off. But now that we have all these issues, the only way to solve the issues that we have is by spending more money.
More money.
All the additional surplus that we can now reap the reward of, if we want to do more next year, then we need to keep that money in the business so that we have, number one, peace of mind of all the money that we're spending. Our employees have peace of mind right? Even though they don't really care, but I fear more for my employees sometimes than they do, right?
Than they do, absolutely, absolutely.
And so, and then not only that is, now if we're scaling and growing a business, we can't, like, in the beginning, it's easier to just, like, I read the E-Myth early on, right? So I look at the entrepreneur, the manager, the technician, right? So in the beginning, you're hiring technicians. So that makes it a little bit easier because they don't cost as much. You're able to do deals. To get to the next level, now you have to start hiring managers. And managers, management level, C-suite level, they don't really pay for themselves in the beginning. You know what I mean? It takes time for them to pay for themselves. And they're expensive. So it's not like, hey, I can just hire this cheap VA who immediately is going to bring in leads tomorrow, right? It's no, now I have to hire a CFO who's going to cost me six-figure salary this year. So immediately month one, right? It's like 10 grand.
10 grand.
And it takes me 3-4 months to figure out if this is the right guy or not, right? Yeah. And so with when you start hiring C-suite, it's great for the long term, but the rug got pulled from under us too quickly to see those rewards. Mm-hmm. And so that was that's the con, right? The con is you kind of go back into this hamster wheel of working, right? And you almost lose sight of why you did it to begin with. Yeah. Right.
You know, I think a lot of times most of us came from middle class families. Right. And yeah. I see this all the time nowadays, especially it's like, oh, my God, if 10 is good, then 30 has got to be better. If 30 is better, then 90 has got to be good. Right.
Yes.
And it's the it's a syndrome of who can pee farther. Right.
Correct.
And really, when we boil it down, life is not about how many. It's not like how many women you marry at the same time. If you get one good quality one, that's worth its weight in gold.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
Because, I mean, the more, because it comes with problems, expenses, and people lose sight of why did I get in the business? I got in the business because at the end of the day, I want cash flow every single month. Doesn't matter if it's from flips, doesn't matter if it's wholesales, doesn't matter if it's rental or Airbnbs, right?
Yep.
So there were a couple of things that, because this is something that I've been passionate about trying to convince people. People are like, oh my God, man, we'll grow this operation for wholesales. So if I made a statement that wholesaling can be very profitable if you do it and you control the scale of it and you're involved, you can do it highly profitably. You start pushing the numbers, your expense ratio, both in terms of your ad, your admin, all the other stuff that goes with it, that doesn't scale. Like you would think it's not linear. The expense curve, you know, it just goes exponential. Would that be a correct statement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? And to be a highly effective wholesaler, you have to be able to think clear. You need to understand opportunity when it's in front of you. You need to be able to drop everything and go get this deal because that's where you make your money, right? As a wholesaler, in a scaled operation, you can't do that. And so you're almost forced to not get the deep deals, get the good deals when they're in front of you. You have to like only work with sellers that will work with your system.
Yeah.
And so you don't get the true fruits of being a wholesaler. Yeah.
So Gonzalo, we're talking about kind of scaling the wholesale operation. So if you looking at it from your perspective now, right? And obviously we'll get to the modification that you've done to your own business. If somebody is kind of out there doing wholesales or really wants to make a profitable wholesale operation, how would you look at it? Like what are the metrics that they should be looking at? And what do you think is the optimum place where you can have good profitability versus the expense ratio there?
That's a great question. So I would say really the metrics that you should be looking at is one of the biggest ones is fallout rate. So from a house, if you get 5 deals under contract, how many houses actually sell from that? And the reason why I bring that one up is because we had, if you look at any wholesale operation that's super scaled, the drop-off rate is super high. Because we're taking a ton of shots.
Yeah.
And that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But what that does is it creates so much noise.
Yeah.
Right. The workload of putting 10 houses under contract when we're only going to sell 5, it's a lot of work to put those 10 houses under contract. Right. And so I would say your drop-off rate in a efficient, maximized wholesale operation, right? So doing as much as you can while being the most efficient, you shouldn't be dropping off more than, I would say, 30%, right? So if you get 10 deals, you should be able to sell 7 of them, okay? Yeah. And really should be better, but you still want to take shots. You still want to take chances, and things are going to happen, right? And right. So I would say 30% fall off rate is acceptable. Anything over that, you're going into that scale territory where now you have to hire dispo people. You have to hire more people to close that gap. And now once you have a dispo person, you have to keep them busy. Yeah. And so now you run into this rabbit hole of, well, I got this dispo guy. Let me go lock up 2 more contracts, even though they don't always make the most sense as deals. He can shop them out, gives them something to do, and then we'll get some numbers back and then we'll renegotiate the deal and whatever, right? And so you run into this loop of having to keep your team busy.
Right.
And when you do that, you make wrong decisions.
You know, it's a lot like we were talking about kind of the scale thing. I mean, I hear in the multifamily world, I hear this all the time, right? Or I'll hear this with somebody. They're like, Andrew, I have 100 houses. Well, it depends where you have 100 houses. If you have 100 houses in the middle of Kansas City, which you can't even get to, right? I mean, a pile of shit is not better than a small pile of shit. A big pile of shit is just a bigger mess for you to clean up, right?
Correct.
It's not the number of properties. You can have 10 good quality properties, and you can make $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month in net cash flow. Right. It's in fact, the leaner, the cleaner the operation, because the more the moving pieces and parts, the more the problems that it creates. And a lot of times, but it's not sexy. It's very boring. Right.
Lean, it's clean, not something you're going to highlight. So I was getting a lot of that also. Right. Just being fully transparent. Like I was getting a lot of the wrong confirmation.
Sure.
Right. It was like, wow, like, dude, you're blowing up. Like, I want to like build my business like you. Can you coach me? Can you do that? And there was a little bit of that coaching income where you're like, I kind of have to have a really badass operation.
Absolutely.
Even though it may not be making as much money as it could.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other things that make it sexy that's wrong.
I mean, it was, man, it's, listen, I walk into your office and I'm like, man, this is badass. Yeah. Right. I mean, you have to give it to somebody that's built that. I mean, that's something to be proud of, because just the thing of being able to operate at that level, be able to pay that sort of salaries. But then again, it boils down to, hey, man, I could probably run an operation, do about $500,000-$600,000 in gross and take 250 home. Right.
Yes.
Is that bad? Right. Rather than 5 million or 8 million. And then you're like barely scraping by and you have one bad month. I mean, that will ruin your whole 6-8 months down the road. And now you got the stress of all these people that are on payroll, right? I mean, you're like, holy shit.
you're preaching to the choir, man. You're preaching to the choir, man. I went through that and I'm blessed that I got to experience that, right? I'm blessed that I went through that.
So talking about this before we kind of go to the next stage, right? Because this is a question a lot of people are going to have. Because where were you pulling your leads from?
So we were mainly getting our leads from PropStream.
Okay.
Okay.
And what type of leads were you pulling?
So our favorite leads are leads that have to sell, not could, or maybe they could want to sell, right? So who are leads that have to sell? Pre-foreclosures, tax delinquent, code violations. And so here it's different in every state, but here we have the tax deed auction also. Mm-hmm. There's tax delinquent, people who haven't paid their property taxes, but there's also people that are going up to tax auction.
The tax auction.
Right now, tax auction is my favorite list.
Favorite. So for your operation, obviously, right? I mean, because this is a 40 VAs making calls 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day. What was the time? 6 to 8 hours a day?
8 hours a day. Yeah.
8 hours a day.
No,
okay.
8 hours a day, they work, but that 1 hour lunch break and 2 15-minute breaks. So 6.5 hours.
Let's say six and a half hours. Okay. So for that, how many leads were you pulling a month? And then how would you recycle them?
So let me preface that. The list that I just gave you was not what we were calling. It was inside of what we were calling. But to your point, we got to the point where this is, we have to dial 50,000 more leads today.
Yeah.
And so we got to the point where we were just pulling everybody.
Pulling everything.
Okay. If you owned a single family house under, we saw that the price point impacted the hedge fund's offers, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're buying off cap rates.
Sure.
And so anything over like 350, 400,000, their offers got weaker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, and then anything in bad areas, they would just say, we don't buy because of median income or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we saw this sweet spot. And so anything under three, so that's literally how we started to pull our list was 350 and under, mm-hmm. 150 and above.
Yeah.
Single
family. So you're buying basically C plus B markets, basically.
Exactly. Right?
C plus B markets. Okay. That's the sweet spot for rentals anyways.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And so
that
is all we were pulling, and we just didn't care about parameters anymore. Now it's just like, how do we get more lists?
But you know,
this goes back.
Yeah. But this goes back to the point he was talking about earlier, guys. And this is the nuance important to catch in this conversation, that what happens is you could actually have a pretty hot list, let's just call it, if you were not doing as many calls. But when you do so many damn calls, you're doing 50,000 calls, you have no choice because you run out of people to call.
Correct.
So now you're calling hot, cold, and everybody in between. And now suddenly what happens is your expense ratio goes all crazy. You're like, man, I was profitable when I was doing only this many calls. But shouldn't I be more profitable when I do this many? No, because the quality of the leads went down, right? And those nuances people a lot of times don't grasp. But I mean, that's such an intrinsic thing about understanding the nuances of the business, because, and this is what I was saying, I think, when we got cut off, which is that there's such a thing, which is in real estate, you have to be ready and you have to have the market present you a deal. With calling and with all these things, what we're doing is we're forcing the market to yield the deal. And if you force it too much, your quantity will go up, but your quality will go down.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that is where the nuances are. And then some of the deals he was talking about with a deep well, like you have 100, 150, 200,000 equity in them, because you're running such a big operation, you are forced to sell them rather than keep them in your portfolio, because you're like, man, these are the good deals that we can really make a margin on. And I have a big nut to crack at the end of the month, 200, 300,000 I got to pay in terms of all the marketing costs, payroll, all that stuff. So I'm forced to sell. This is such a fun conversation that I've had with, you know, Blake in our market, right?
Blake
McWright?
I think so. From Chicago.
I think you know, because he knows.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a conversation we have. He's in Mastery and we have this conversation all the time. I'm like, Blake, dude, you got to keep it. He's like, man, Andrew, last month wasn't as good, right? I can just dump the property, make 70 grand. Right today, I'm like, no, man, you got to keep it. I don't care where you go, drive Uber, go do whatever.
Yes.
And he's a successful guy, right? But when you have 60, 80,000, you're dropping on a ad spend on TV budget or mailings or staff, right? It becomes a big challenge. And most people don't understand that. So
absolutely. And I would say that it was kind of like what when I mentioned when like you forget why you got into it to begin with, right? It's like, hey, I got into real estate because of passive income, cash flow,
100%,
and be retired by 25. That was 100%. Why, right? Because I got in when I was 19. So I was like, oh man, if I just buy two rentals a year, right? And when you're 19, your monthly expenses are like $3,500, $3,000. You're like, man, by the time I'm 25, if I have, you know, if I just buy two houses a year, I'll be financially free at 26 years old.
Yeah.
And,
you know, the funniest thing is, I come to see you, right? And I'm like, oh my God, this is great. I'm so impressed by Gonzalo. I got to add some of what he's doing to what I'm doing. I spent 160 grand, right? In a matter of 6 months, I found 28 properties, sold one wholesale.
Kept the rest.
So good. I was like, I kept all of them. Right?
I'm
not selling. I'm like, I just couldn't get myself to sell them, right? But then the problem is, if you don't have that kind of a, you know, ash reserves, how do you operate that? Like, if I had tried to do that for a year, two, 3 years, right? You're buying that many properties, you just run out of money. I don't care who it is. And I was liquid. I had 5-6 million liquid, but you just start running out of money, because by the time you rehab them, you put them back online, you refinance them, they start making money. And that's that conundrum, which is the toughest conundrum people get into.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? You know what they say, knowledge is not power, but rather it's the application of knowledge that is power. That's why we are excited to announce the new dates for our Build Your Empire 3-day conference and property tour. At this game-changing event, you'll discover how to build lasting wealth with real estate, learn step-by-step methods, avoid common mistakes, and get insights from dozens of real estate and financial experts. If you are listening to the podcast, you know that real estate is a team sport, and we're here to introduce you to the local pros who can help you every step of the way. This event is your opportunity to walk through active real estate deals in Chicago and nearby neighborhoods. And the best part is, you can either attend live or virtually. Go to andrewholmesevents.com and get your early bird tickets now. At the event, you'll see properties being transformed into flips, rentals, or wholesale properties, giving you a rare and valuable learning experience outside the classroom. Meet and learn from successful students who've profited from our mentorship. Hear their stories and struggles, and discover how you can follow in their footsteps, regardless of your background or experience. And so much more. We also have a VIP package that will give you access to our exclusive networking sessions and an opportunity to connect and meet with Andrew himself. Plus, we even give you a hot lunch all of the days you are there. For more information and to secure your spot, visit andrewholmesevents.com. We sell out every time, so don't miss this opportunity to transform your real estate career. We will see you at our next event. And now, back to the show.
Yes. So now let's do the transition, right? Yeah. Which is that when did the tap kind of get turned off suddenly?
So I would say May of 2022, we had our best month ever. We locked up 78 seller contracts.
Wow.
It was insane. Awesome. Month of June, we had to cancel about 50% of them. And that's when we should have seen the writing on the wall and we should have been like, okay, we need to figure something out. But instead, what we did was we pivoted as the hedge funds were pivoting, because they didn't stop day one, right? They also weren't like, oh, sure, we're going to have to stop buying. They said, hey, we're going to change our buy box a little bit. We're going to turn off our weaker markets, right? We're going to increase the year built, right? So before we were buying 1950 and newer, now let's go to 1965 and newer, right? And so we were like, okay, let's just change with them, right? That change with them lasted 5 months of nothing happening, right? And so every month we were just depleting cash. You know, the deals were closing. Luckily, they didn't cancel anything that they had already pending under contract, which was awesome. What happened was there was nothing new coming in.
Yeah.
And while that new coming in, it was fool's gold, right? It was just like, hey, we're going to put a new buy box next week. Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. We'll just wait till next week, right? Yeah. And then that happened for like 4 months. October, we were forced to make tough decisions, right?
Yeah. Because now the burn rate is so high. You got so many people, right? And exactly. This is what it is that people don't understand that when you have a burn rate of that, you got to keep feeding that beast, right?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, it's the bigger the operation, the more, it's not just responsibility of people, guys. It's the amount of, I mean, think about the bankroll. And if you just have 200,000, 300,000, 400,000, half a million, but if you have payroll a month, right? If you have all these expenses a month that are going out, how long can you sustain? I mean, most business, 2, 3, 4 months, you're going to at some point run out of cash, plain and simple. Even if you're liquid, you're going to run out of cash because your burn rate is just so high. And now you're losing sleep, right?
Correct.
Now you're like, oh, shit, what the hell am I going to do?
Absolutely.
How do I go show face? I sold all these guys a dream and it was legit. It was not like, I mean, it was a legit thing. You're like, hey, man, we're going to build this. You guys are on our team. I mean, you guys are built a great sense of camaraderie, a sense of ownership, a sense of belonging, right? And now suddenly, now you got to go into business mode and say, hey, man, so what was that like in terms of you? Did it take you kind of a week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks to say, man, I mean, I've had enough. I just cannot pull this through. And then was your partner on the same page as you?
So that was, these were interesting times, man, because it was the first time, like we had always been on the up and up. We had always seen eye to eye on everything, right? Everything was great. And then, so December of 2022, I had my first son. I had my first baby also. So I also had that kind of in the back of my mind, right? Of just like, wow, everything that I have now is not mine, is my kids, right? Mm-hmm. But it took us, we were very hopeful, which, you know, it is what it is, right? Sure. But we were very hopeful. Sure. And in October, we realized we needed to start laying off people, right? And by the end of October, it came in waves. So we were like, okay, we need to start laying off people. Let's let go of the, you know, the low hanging fruit, the sure. bottom barrel, the new people that just came on, blah, 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 blah. And then a week later, we kept figuring out new expenses, new things, new, like everything was kept getting worse. I know that sounds weird, but it's like, yeah. it kept getting worse. Like this flip that we had that we yeah. were counting on, like, you know, putting an extra 50K, now that deal's falling through. And now we're scared because the retail market was also bad, right? Yeah. Like this yeah. is at the same time of like, we're like, okay, well now we just need to pivot to our mom and pop investors.
Sure.
We would call our mom and pop investors. They're like, yo, we're not yeah, doing we're anything out. Right yeah. now. We're yeah. like turned off. We're like, oh God, like is the world falling apart, right? Yeah. And so end of October, we had one wave of layoffs, then a second wave of layoffs. The toughest was the third wave of layoff, because by the time we did the second wave, we had to instill confidence on the yeah. people left that they're not next on the yeah. list. So it was yeah. very tough, because from between the wave of two and three, we had to have a talk with wave three
yeah.
and made them feel like nothing was going to happen, made them feel like we're all okay. You know what I mean? And that was the toughest part, man, was having these talks on like, you guys are all fine. Yeah. And then 3 weeks later, I know I told you guys were fine. And unfortunately, like we're having to close up shop. Yeah. Right. And
yeah, no, that's a tough conversation, right? Yeah. Where you're like, you feel like a personal failure, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh my God, man, what did I do? What could I have done? I mean, yes. because you're like, hey, this is your little baby, right?
Yep.
And yep. you're like, oh my God. So not only, I think it's a big letdown in terms of letting people down and blah, 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 now second guessing every damn thing you've done. And then you're like, okay, what's next?
Absolutely. And not only that, like, you also convince your wife, like building yeah. a business that big takes a lot of yeah. sacrifice yeah. in the household, right? Yeah. It takes a lot of, hey, business comes first for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. Like Absolutely. We all have to be on board. If I'm going to build yeah. something big, bigger than yeah. us, then you're not going to see me on weeknights. I'm going to be networking. I'm going to masterminds. I'm going to this, you know what I mean? Like our vacations yeah. turned into masterminds.
Right.
And so I just right. started taking my wife to the mastermind. We'd stay sure. a day later, hang out. That was right. our vacation. But really, I'm there for 3 days trying to learn and build connections. Right.
Right.
And so that was also a very hard thing. Right. Was just like, wow, I've forced my wife and I to sacrifice a lot. And, you know, I'm not saying this is the right thoughts, but that's what you're thinking at that time.
No, absolutely. I mean, right? absolutely, man. I mean,
and you're just like, no, man, like the last 10 years, I told my yeah. wife, like, No dinner dates, no yeah. this, no that. We're not buying this. Everything's going in the company.
Sure.
And my employees are making way more money than I am.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because you want to retain good people.
Correct.
Obviously. Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, no question about it. So once you obviously at some point you're like, man, this is what it is. I mean, this just really doesn't matter. Reality is that there's just no more money to pay.
Yes.
I mean, that is what it is. So did you and your partner stay together? Did you guys decide, okay, no, we'll kind of go separate ways, build kind of different type of businesses? What happened on that side of it?
So once we let go of pretty much everybody, we kept our managers, right? So I had three managers, one sales manager who managed all the acquisitions, mm-hmm. another disposition manager who managed all of the dispo, the selling of the houses, all the hedge funds and all that. And then I had a transaction coordination manager. But she really managed three other transaction coordinators,
yeah.
Right? And mm-hmm. so we kept the managers.
Okay.
And it was tough, man, because they had like equity plans and all this, right? And so we had to have very serious talks with everyone, with just those managers on, hey, you guys are the chosen three of who we're picking. Mm-hmm. And I'm coming out of my pocket to pay your guys' salaries. Mm-hmm. And I am doing that happily because now I don't have to pay 30 other salaries. Now I just have to pay these three salaries. But now there's nobody for you to manage. So now you're back. You're back on the straddle. You're back closing deals. You're back selling deals, and you're managing transactions now. which was okay, but it just wasn't the same anymore, you know? And I lost those people, right? Yeah. Like the company wasn't the same. They weren't making the same amount of money. Yeah. Over time, I lost those people. But to answer your question, once we shrunk it down that small, first was like, let's stop the bleeding. Boom, we shrunk it. Then it was like, what do we do? It wasn't like, let's figure out what to do, then shrink it, then whatever. Yeah. Right? It was like, let's stop the bleeding. Then we had to figure out what to do.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, it's like a trauma thing, right? You got to save the patient first.
Correct.
You got to stop the bleeding first before you're going to think, okay, can they walk or not? It's like, you got to stop that. So today, if we look at your business, right? Yep. What does that look like today?
So right now, what my business looks like is I have 3 staff members. Mm-hmm. Okay. One is a disposition manager. Mm-hmm. He has a support admin. Mm-hmm. And then I have kind of like a transaction/office manager, because now I'm doing a bunch of flips, and the flips don't really require staff, which is why I'm now flipping, because now I no longer care about the sexy deal volume, high volume. Let's do it. Let's do 1,000 deals this year. Yeah. Let's blow this up. Now I'm kind of like, I just want the Navy SEALs, right? Who are my best people? How can we maximize the most? And I've changed their pay structure to not incentivize volume.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's not a matter of like, how many deals did we do? It's like, how much money came in?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, quality versus quantity.
Yes.
Now. Right. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Correct. That makes perfect sense. And as far as your acquisitions now.
Yep.
Where is your acquisitions coming from? Are you guys still doing cold calling? Are you go back to the mail? Are you buying from other wholesalers? What's the acquisition look like?
So all of my acquisitions right now is buying from other wholesalers.
Okay. Got it.
Yep. And so because we've been wholesaling I've been wholesaling now for almost 10 years. This December will be 10 years. I have one of the best buyers list in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So we're back to our stomping grounds where we know everything best.
Yeah.
You know, who to call on, what deal, when to call, what title company to give this file. Oh, it has this buyer on the title. Let's send it to this title company because they handle that better than this title company, right? Just having all that expertise.
The nuances. Yeah.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Inside of my Cash Geeks business, I also had a big JV department, which is just getting other wholesalers deals. They bring the deals to us. We sell the deal for them. Mm-hmm. Now that little department became my entire business.
Entire business.
Okay. And so it's beautiful. I love it because we're doing business to business sales. We don't have to ask for business, right? People call us because we've just been doing this for so long. Sure. And I've done a lot of online marketing. And we had that whole department for like 2 years, right? So we have consistent wholesalers that bring us deals. And as the market turned, we didn't really add as much value to wholesalers while the market was super hot, unless it was a hedge fund property.
Yeah.
Everybody knew like, I can just sell this to anybody. But if I just sell to a hedge fund, I'll call Cash Geeks, right? When the market turned, now they need Cash Geeks. Now they need us to sell their deals. And so it took me until August of last year of me trying to figure out marketing. Sure. To just say, I'm just cutting it off because it's costing money and it's making money. Mm-hmm. But what I'm not doing is I'm not leveraging what I've built, right? I'm trying to do it like if I am starting from scratch, and I'm not starting from scratch, right? Looking back, I'm so blessed and happy I did do that because now with me flipping houses, and I mean, in the last, literally since February 1, we raised a ton of money. We got strategic with raising money because last year we did about 20 flips, 2023. And this year we want to scale it and grow it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So February 1, we went on a buying spree. So in 2 weeks, we've bought 10 houses. And it's because these are 40 grand deals, 40, 45K flip deals. And it's just because I can now contact the same wholesalers that I've been JVing with and be like, hey, why don't I just buy it? And
as far as the flips, the price range you're buying in Jacksonville, obviously, like Jacksonville to me is just looking at it from the outside. I don't know anything about it, but to me, it's a blue collar, white collar mix type of town, right? It's not like the sexy Miami and that kind of thing. It's everyday people, bread and butter type of town. So what's the price range you're trying to sell into? And then what are you trying to buy at?
Great question. So we don't love exiting over 350,000. So 350,000 ARV.
Makes sense.
We'll do it, but we have to be in the right area.
Right. Yeah.
So like the Jacks Beach area.
Sure.
High-end areas, we're comfortable with it. There, we still don't want to break 400, right? 450.
Because that's not the meat of the market. That's not the sweet spot in the market, right? And this is important, guys, because a lot of times people are like, oh, yeah, it's $1 million house. Guys, money is in that sweet spot, right?
Absolutely.
Those houses are harder to find because there's a lot of competition, but they're the easiest to fix and they're easiest to dump because even with higher interest rate, you have the most amount of buyers in that price range. That's just what it is, right? So what for you, what is a good like turn time in terms of buy, rehab, and resale in terms of time frame? And how much profit generally do you try to shoot for after expenses?
So after expenses, our bottom net profit is $30,000. That's what
$30,000.
Okay. After expenses, after hard money, after commissions, after all that. Sure. And turn time, 5 months.
Five months is long.
Yes, but we
budget. You guys don't have as many issues with permits and all that kind of stuff in your market as we
do. Luckily, no. They have come up, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that take long, five months, right?
Sure.
But luckily, we have great contractors. We have great. We've kind of like partnered with flippers on our flipping side, right? Sure. Because understanding like how to scale flipping is not just I have a great contractor. Right. It's understanding like when to pull the permit, when to like, how do we make the flip the most efficient? Right. Let's start do this. Let's do that. And so we've partnered up with flippers in 2021. Great flipper client of mine. We were the guys that were finding the deals for all these local mom and pops. And then we turned and started only selling deals to hedge funds. So all these flippers were like, yo, where's all the inventory? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so a good buddy of mine, who I had been selling flips to for a long time, he was like, man, I built up all these great crews and I know the flipping process like inside and out, but I can't find any deals. Can you recommend my contracting services to any of your flippers?
Sure.
And I was like, dude, I'm slowly starting to get into flips. Why don't you just do my flips?
Yeah.
And that, I mean, since then, like he's done probably over 40 projects for us and now we're partnering up and scaling it and growing it.
Sure.
And so luckily we have that, but with scale, we are budgeting now more whole time because we know when you're doing a low volume, just like we were just talking about, right? Yeah. When we're doing low volume, it's a little bit easier to do things with more scaled volume. Now we are going to have to figure out long hold time. We're calculating longer hold time. Yeah. We're not expecting it to kick in, but on our calculator, as you know, right? The calculator is everything. Right. Yep. You have to put everything inside of the calculator, stress test the calculator, enhance the calculator. Right. Our favorite thing is like, all right, we timestamped the calculator and we were going to make 45,000, but we only made 32. Right. Or we only made 28. What happened? Right. Yeah. Did we not budget closing costs? Did we not? Right. Because there's always those little things that come up that you don't factor.
No, 100%. 100%. Yeah. So today, how do you decide whether this is going to be a wholesale, this is going to be a flip, or this is going to be in the rental portfolio? Because I know we were talking about that, right? You're now thinking about, okay, how do I truly build cash flow for life, right? Yes. So how are you doing that now?
So right now, where we are determining, we're letting the area and our profit margin determine where we want to flip, right? Because there's a lot of blue collar areas where they're not the best flip markets. Okay. They're great for rentals. They're great for wholesaling to landlords and stuff like that. But we don't necessarily want to flip in those areas.
Got it.
And so a lot of those will wholesale out, right? Mm-hmm. And then the ones that we flip, if it's too tight of a deal, because keep in mind, we're buying from wholesalers. So if it's too tight of a deal, we need to do what's best for the wholesaler because we believe in that longevity of business. And we know that if we get their deals over time, we're going to buy flips from them anyway. Right. Sure. And so like on this deal, like it just happened yesterday where we went and looked at a house and our buy number is like 90 and they have it for 99.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can probably wholesale it for like 110. So like, it's in my best interest, like, hey, go renegotiate it and let's, you know what I mean? But we can wholesale it, make a quick buck. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Right.
Got it.
And so as far as what's fitting into the rental portfolio, to be honest, I don't have those guidelines just yet.
Okay.
Really, what I'm focusing on for the rental portfolio is going to be that mixture of, honestly, it's going back to your calculator. Like, I still use your calculator till this day.
All right.
Every time I use that, because we don't want to get caught up into just buying cash flow, cash assets, because there's a lot of cheap houses in Jacksonville. Yeah. So it is tempting sometimes to just, oh, we can buy this for $50,000 cash. Let's just, you know, park the cash there and whatever. But those aren't always the best long-term holds, right? And so we're trying 100%. To figure that mixture of appreciating areas, having equity in the deal. And that's why we love flipping, because now it gives us that option, right? We're just wholesaling. We have to just feed the beast. Now that we're flipping it, as we're flipping it, there's one right now that we're flipping that we're like, okay, this could be the first one of our rental portfolio for this year, right? Like, now we're talking to a lender on the DSCR rate for it, right? And because I haven't bought a rental in almost 2 years now, right? A year and a half. So I don't know what rates are today. You know, I knew what they were 6 months ago. So I'm exploring those talks right now. So it's going to be a mixture of appreciating areas, cash flowing, and by us flipping, we now have a lot of burring ability. But with that being said, certain price points and stuff like that don't really make the burrs work. So now we are we're figuring out that buy box for rentals. But we do know that tax wise, and one thing that I learned while all of my buddies were also feeling the impact of this market, I didn't have rentals that I could just sell to take care of me, right? And while a lot of my mentors and people who have been in this longer did have that, right? And they're like, hey, I'm feeling the hit, but I just sold a rental that I've owned for 4 years and I'm recouping 200K cash on it, right? Mm-hmm. And so not all of that's profit, but I'm recouping everything that I've put in the house and I made an extra, you know, 100 grand. So now I have that 200K peace of mind where I didn't have that. And so going into this new venture of flipping and all that stuff, I'm realizing that I need to buy rentals, not just for the passive income and all that, but for that, who knows what's going to happen in 2-3 years from now. If I have a little, you know, portfolio of 20 houses, I can sell 3 and be fine for the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can lose my entire business, lose everything, but I sell 3 and I'm good.
Properties with huge amount of equity, huge amount of cash flow, it's the best security you can ever have.
Yes.
Right.
And that
we have a guy here, actually he's out of Mastery, successful guy, runs a bunch of like breakfast places, right? Blueberry Hill. And, you know, his first thing when he came to Mastery, my point to him was, I'm like, don't flip, just buy. He's like, Andrew, but what am I going to do with 30, 40 rentals? I'm like, you'll figure it out. You're a smart guy, right? Guess what happens? Corona hits.
Yes.
He's got 30 or 40 rentals where he's in it for 100, 120 properties worth 180. Boom. He starts boom. And he ended up basically having to liquefy about 15 properties, right?
Yeah.
But that's like, he's like, man, I still have a tax problem. But I'm like, listen, you'd rather have that because restaurant business shut down. Right.
Correct.
And that's where that whole thing comes in, is that rentals is the most boring thing you'll ever do with real estate. But I mean, we've had this conversation, right? If you take care of real estate for the first five years, real estate will take care of you for the rest of your life, literally. And that comes for rentals. But like, just like you, now the discipline of doing 3, 4, 5 flips, have to do one rental, and you have to force yourself because you're like, man, I can sell it, make 60, 70 grand on the property. And you're like, I'm keeping it. Right. So it's just a challenge. No, this has been an absolute, amazing conversation, because I wanted to have you on because the depth of the business, which is building it to that kind of scale, where you're doing 300 transactions, 400 transactions, and then saying, no, let's optimize it. Let's become highly profitable. The goal should be profit. The goal should not be the number of transactions, right?
Correct.
And I've always been You know, because I was not never able to scale that high. And so my deal always was that, man, listen, this year, can I buy an extra 30 rentals? Next year, another 30 rentals. Next year, another 30 rentals. You know, and pretty soon, you know it, over a 6, 8, 10 year period, you got 300-400 rentals that are phenomenal quality. Now, it doesn't matter. If the market goes up, you're happy because the rents go up. If the market collapses, you buy more rentals because nobody else can buy them. Right. So it's one of those things.
Yeah. So it took me a little bit. Took me a little bit to understand that. Took me a little bit of growing up to do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Listen, as well. I wish, Gonzalo, I genuinely wish I knew what you know today at 28. I bought my first property, rental property, when I was 35.
Wow. Right?
I mean, it just puts in perspective.
That, no, I appreciate that.
You know, I mean, I genuinely mean it, that by the time you're 35, that's 7 years, man.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even if you bought 6, 8 rentals a year, forget about 2030,
yeah.
Right? Six, eight good quality rentals, man, that's 25, 30,000 a month net income.
Yes.
Right. And now anything else you do, because clearly you already have the ability, right?
Yep.
I mean, the operation that you ran, it's a much bigger operation than owning a bunch of rental properties. So, you know, it's definitely doable. So anything that I may have missed that you felt was important to cover?
No, I feel like one of the things that I did want to highlight though is the unique spot of where I'm at is kind of going back to where you said you sent a bunch of marketing, you wanted to keep all these deals, but how do you juggle that? Like, I kept all of these, but now I need to make money. Like, that is where I feel like I'm trying to position myself in, right? Mm-hmm. Where now I'm like, where can I make the most amount of money on this house, but at the same time, force myself to keep rentals, but still having the ability to, hey, if I need to pay my debt service, pay, you know, the office, pay this. Hey, this month, I'm going to flip this one house, right? I'm going to wholesale this real quick. And so I feel like there's no perfect combination, right? But the ideal world is a little bit of wholesaling. You flip the whales, you keep some rentals. And by having that, you don't need to have that crazy of an operation to do that.
You don't.
You know what I mean?
No, so it's, you like can have a highly profitable, I mean, that's exactly the kind of, I realized that that all these years I've been buying rentals, right? But when I scaled it to buying only A area rentals, I used to buy solid Bs, BB plus.
Yep.
And then I decided 2 years ago, I'm going to only buy A area rentals. But now you're buying expensive properties, right? Now you get solid tenants, 4,000 a month in rent, right? But yet now these, you start buying the property at 250, 300, that's your buy price. Right. And it puts a big damper on your parade suddenly.
Yeah.
And so like this year, I mean, I haven't done flips in a very long time, like any significant amount. This year, probably I'm going to end up doing 12, 14 flips, which for me is a lot. Right. But that will bring in about close to 800,000-900,000. And it's not necessarily I'm taking that money home. I don't need, fortunately, to take the money home. But yet that gives you that liquidity. Right.
Yes.
So that you can keep buying, you know, at a fast pace. And you need money to live on. Right. A lot of times people will, they have a good job and they'll quit. And then they're like, well, real estate doesn't work. No. It works. You got to give it little time. Right. Yeah. You're not going to suddenly go build an operation like what Gonzalo built out of scratch, because it takes time. These things take time. So, oh, man, this has been absolutely, absolutely awesome. Loved having you. Thank you so much again for making time. And this has been awesome. So next time I'm in Florida, you know, I know I promised you and your wife a trip. So one of these days we got to go, man.
Let's do it, man. I appreciate you having me on. I love having these talks. And thank you for the opportunity.
Definitely. No, I mean, I think even a lot of our guys will get so much value, because it's like, you know, it's one thing when you're talking to somebody who's straight up. It's another thing when you're like, oh my God, when you have to eat a little bit humble pie. And then you realize that if you've never been through that, guess what? You've never been tested.
Correct.
Right? Character is built not when everything is going correctly, right? Character is built when you can look back and go, man, you know, I mean, I did a lot of things well. These were the improvements. Now I got to correct it. And that happens to all of us every time. Yep. I tried to do your business. I got my butt handed to me. I mean, it's just God's honest truth. Because I understand cash flow,
Right. Right.
Understanding your business, I'm like, I'm spending money a month, right? 20,000, yeah. 30,000 a month, I'm burning money. And all these leads are just going by the wayside. I mean, I write on TV right. ads and everything. Finally, I realized I just give those leads to Blake. He can smart. Make money on them.
So because, smart.
Because just because you
that's
can
what
do
I'm
TV
doing
well,
now. With my,
yeah. I mean,
because I have no acquisitions and I yeah. still get leads from my internet. So I just yeah. give them to my best JV wholesalers. Yeah. They close them. Yeah. I, you know, obviously there's a little sure. bit more of a favorable split, but sure. I don't want to yeah. deal with the acquisitions. Give yeah. them to the wholesaler that has the system that's crushing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the no, smart.
It makes so much sense. Just because you're good on the phone doesn't mean you'll do good with leads from the internet. Doesn't mean you'll do good with TV leads because correct. Doesn't mean you'll good do with the mailings because each yeah. of these, you have to be a specialist in every yeah. single absolutely. One of them. So absolutely. No, man, this has been awesome, guys, for everybody listening. This is a guy that you still do your podcast, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Gonzalo has a podcast. You always
dude, let's get
lot,
you on there.
Right.
One of
yeah,
these
yeah,
days.
Yeah. Anytime. Yeah. Just let me know, man. Let yeah. me know whenever, and we will arrange it. We'd love to be on. And so Gonzalo is somebody you want to follow. The great part about Gonzalo is that how transparent he is with not only with the success with what he built, because it's a business he built, he should be proud of, but say, hey, business changes, right? And this is reality of the conversation that we just had. Again, please like and follow, and please share with your friends. Hopefully you enjoyed the conversation. Gonzalo, my friend, thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate
thank it. Thank you. See you guys.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Cash Flow for Life podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. Achieving financial freedom is all about creating the necessary cash flow in your life. Our team has designed an entire ecosystem for you to be able to not only become a successful real estate investor, but for you to build higher cash flows month after month. Join our community at www.nationalreinvest.com to see which event is coming up that you can be a part of and how you can be a part of our community. Once again, it's www.nationalreinvest.com. We will see you on the next episode.